Podcast 70 in 3, 2, 1.
Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loff.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 70 for June 20, 2011. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
I'm Mike Calvo.
And they call me the beast in the basement. I'm Matt Campbell.
Roar!
Yay!
We dragged him out of the basement, people.
If you listen carefully, you can hear his chains clinking every once in a while.
Welcome, Matt. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, welcome, Matt. Good to have you in here with us. Before we get into our main news stories, there's a few things we want to talk about. First off, a few folks were a little bothered by our last podcast, feeling maybe we were being a little hard on Apple. I guess they were kind of looking for all the new cool features, and we were kind of looking at it from a mainstream consumer perspective, as did many other podcasts, kind of pointing out that, yeah, some of this stuff's cool, but maybe not the innovation that some had hoped for. But either way, the big thing we want to say is we welcome and appreciate your comments. So whatever it takes to motivate you to send us emails or call the blab line, we want to hear if you like or don't like what we're doing. Mike, since things always get heated when you come in, do you have any comments you want to throw that way?
Well, sure. Throw me under the bus, why don't you? Actually, you know, I'm excited anytime we get a response to any of our podcasts, because sometimes we wonder if people are out there. Some would say no news is good news, but we always welcome your comments. I want to say a couple of things for the record. First of all, those of us that are doing this podcast, we see stuff every day. We're kind of geeks, and we look at a number of different platforms, a number of different products. So when we see certain features that we've seen in other products pop up in a product, we just say, yawn, you know, give me some new innovation. That's just our little geek arrogance popping through sometimes. As I said it in the podcast, we commend Apple on their accessibility. We think it's awesome. We continue to applaud what they're doing. But quite candidly, this podcast is on the side of the consumer, not on the side of any of these companies. We have been quick to kick a company in the teeth when they do something from an accessibility or consumer standpoint that we don't like, and we've been quick to pat them on the back. And I think that going forward, that's going to continue. You will rarely, if ever, find any of us that are biased towards any company that we review here. I mean, that's the whole idea behind a review, right? Is to be candid and honest and straightforward with our opinion. And that's what a review is our opinion. But we welcome yours. And that just because we're addressing it is because we don't want you guys to feel that your comments go unwelcome or unmentioned or unobserved. And we're here to listen to your comments, to respond to them. But the good news is, for those of you who enjoyed our ranting and raving, not only in the podcast 69, but in other infamous podcasts that have gone down in ranting history, we will continue the trend going forward. As long as you continue to listen, we're going to continue to provide the cutting-edge information and reviews and sitting at the edge of your seat conversation that we have continued to provide for a while now.
Well, the reason we have you here and what brings Matt Campbell connected from the basement, just as exciting, we feel, as the news in June of 2009 when we talked about the first mainstream accessible device where we do not pay 1 cent more for accessibility. Yesterday, Mikey, you got your Chromebook.
I did, and it was very exciting. I started the Chromebook adventure with Google Chrome. You know, we've been very, very verbal on this podcast about beating up Google in the past about accessibility on Android and the gaping holes in accessibility in Android, especially when it comes to email and the web. On the other hand, and I don't know where the disconnect is at Google, quite candidly, but frankly, I don't care, because I was able to go and order a Chromebook from Amazon.com. It got here. I plugged it into the wall. I went to my my computer, read the instructions for ChromeVox, which is a talking screen reader for the Chrome browser. and was able to turn the Chromebook on, activate Chromebox right on the device, and immediately have accessibility out of the box to set this thing up, connect to my local network, you know, log into my Google account, and get everything set up. So while I do say Google's got number two, because I mean somebody's got to be number one, which Apple did provide us the first out-of-box accessible experience that's available in the consumer market. Congratulations, Google. You did it. Number two. Congratulations. Big round of applause for you guys. I think it's very, very important. For early adopters, I think that Chrome OS is a great thing for you to look at, whether you download it and, you know, load it onto a thumb drive or a memory card or whatever, so you can run it on an old netbook, or you buy one of these cool devices. It's great. I don't know if it's 100% ready for prime time this week. And I'll say that honestly, this week. We work quite a bit with the Chrome guys at Google, and they are very, very responsive. And I won't steal that thunder. I'll let Matt address those types of things in a minute. But the reality is that this thing is very cool. Very, very cool. It shows some great promise. And there is a newsletter that I read that I'm going to put a link in the show notes to for you guys to look at. It's one of the most valuable resources for access to Chrome information that I found, and it covers Chrome OS and Chrome the browser, and there is a pretty close tie-in to those two things, which Matt knows much more about than I do. The one negative thing I will say about the Chromebook is the 3G plan. When you buy this Chromebook, it comes with a 24-month plan from Verizon, right? Wahoo! You get free 3G. Well, you get 100 megs a month for free. But then, after that, if you want 5 gigs a month, $50. If you want 3 gigs a month, $35. And if you want, I think it's 2 gigs a month, it's $20, or the sliding scale. Let it suffice to say that $50 for a Chromebook is a lot of money to me. I mean, even AT&T's plans for the iPad are cheaper than that. So come on, you know, Verizon, get a life. You know,
that's only like three or four Netflix movies. I mean, 5 gig is nothing.
Yeah, you could blink and that's gone.
That's it. And it goes in an eye blink. Oh. But
that's right.
But it really is bad. Now, that being said, I was able to bring up SAMNet on that, and Matt will address our embracing HTML5 in SAMNet, and you're going to see a lot more about HTML5 and hear a lot more about it up and coming if you monitor us on Twitter and if you listen to this podcast. So, Matt, what do you got to say about all this, man?
Well, I'm quite excited about the Chromebook. And probably before too long, I will either buy one of my own or get Chromium OS installed on my Dell Mini netbook, which I bought a few years ago. I admit I have mixed feelings about the whole centralized storage model, where all of your data is stored in some big company's data center, simply because it raises issues of security and privacy and the rights of individuals. But as Scott McNeely, former CEO of Sun Microsystems, said, you have zero privacy anyway. Get over it. So it's clear that the centralized storage model that underlies web apps like Gmail and Dropbox and so forth is here to stay, and that the web has become the new de facto standard platform for apps. What's really nice about the Chromebook is that it is nothing but the web. And I think that a lot of computer users, non-technical computer users especially, probably do little more on their computers than browse the web anyway.
So Matt, let me ask you a question though, because of course you're saying it accurately, but it's confusing because some people think, well, Chrome is just a browser. What happens when the internet isn't available? What's the case going to be? What if I'm on a plane? What if I'm in a subway where there is no access to the internet? What's going to happen then?
HTML5 local storage to the rescue. This feature of HTML5 lets you have a cached copy of your favorite web apps to run in an offline mode. And when people say that Chrome is just a browser, they're downplaying the fact that the browser has come a long, long way since the 90s. the web browser is now a full-blown application platform, something of an operating system unto itself, depending on how you define operating system. JavaScript is a real programming language. It's not just about cutesy little animations and effects anymore. You can write real software in JavaScript. And like I said, HTML5 makes an offline mode possible. I don't know if that is here in Chrome OS yet, but I know that if it's not here, it's coming.
Yeah, they're promising, I don't know if they're promising, but they stated at Google I/O that it's going to be around during the summer. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I'm pretty excited. One of the things I'm really excited about is the seamlessness, Matt, that it provides. I can walk out of my house with the thing running and have a web page up, drive down the street, and it will continue to allow me to browse the web and everything as if I'd never left the house. It's pretty amazing.
I'm curious about something beyond the inclusion of 3G. What's the advantage of having something like a Chromebook as opposed to just installing this on a netbook? Because it's you know, to me, it's very exciting. I don't have to go out and buy a Chromebook. I can just put this thing on my netbook. But why would you want to go spend the $400 or whatever it is?
Okay. I can answer that one. And then, Matt, you can have a whack at it, too, from a technical perspective. But just in a user point of view, one word, Ricky, instant on.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I mean, it's amazing to watch this thing. When you close it, it turns off. When you open it, you can count to three. One, two, three, boom, it's up with speech and all. Even if you have to, for whatever reason, turn the thing all the way off, where you just hold the power button and it turns all the way off, when you click the power button again, it takes about 7 or 8 seconds, 10 seconds at the most, for you to have a password prompt where you enter your password and you're back on, connected and all to the internet.
Ricky, let me answer your question in two ways. First, people might be thinking, well, I have Chrome on my Windows machine now. Why don't I just stick with that? And to answer that, I'll tell you about something that happened to me just before I came into this chat room. So I hooked my keyboard and mouse and microphone back up to my Windows 7 machine after having them unhooked for a while. And Windows didn't recognize the USB drivers for these devices. Somehow a file had gotten deleted from one of Windows' system directories. Now, I had run into this before, and I'm, of course, pretty techy, so I knew what to do. But one of the exciting things about Chrome OS is that since none of your data is permanently stored on the machine, well, first of all, a Chromebook is basically disposable. I mean, at the current prices, you wouldn't want to throw it in a river, but there's no
not
irreplaceable.
So or a Calvo pool.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, you can throw it in my pool.
But there's no irreplaceable data on your Chromebook. Another really good thing, even more relevant to the sort of scenario I just mentioned, is that the operating system installation on a Chromebook is locked down. You cannot do anything to the OS files and directories themselves. They have taken a multi-layered approach to security in Chrome OS, which is going to really improve robustness and all-around simplicity, especially for non-technical users. Now, before I give the second part of my answer to this question, I need to do a brief digression on Chrome nomenclature. So Chrome OS is the official Chrome operating system from Google. There's also Chromium OS, which is the corresponding open source project, which isn't Google branded and doesn't have access to Google's auto update service. So that being said, it might be quite tantalizing to try to get Chromium OS up and running on maybe your netbook that you bought a few years ago. And depending on your netbook model and your tech savvy, you may be able to get that working. But just this morning, I tried to get Chromium OS up and running on my Dell Mini, which I had bought in September 2008. And I ran into a showstopper, which is that Chromium OS, the vanilla nightly build that I downloaded, didn't seemed to include a driver for my Broadcom Wi-Fi chipset, and it doesn't support Ethernet. So the vanilla build of Chromium OS did not recognize any networks on my Dell Mini. Now, I'm a Linux geek, so I'll probably figure out some way to slip a Broadcom driver into the image. But if you're not a Linux geek, you would probably be better off buying a Chromebook.
So, Mikey, I want to put you on the spot. I know you just got the device, but maybe can we count on you in about 2 weeks after you've had some time to play with it to come back and do a review and tell us about email and audio and video and all that cool stuff?
Absolutely. And, you know, Matt, I'm going to go back to you in a second and talk about for a second HTML5 and what the benefits are and how we're going to be using that in SAMNet. Because one of the things that we're using is we're enhancing SAMNet with HTML5 support so that it works better in Chrome. And of course, you know, by relationship works better in the Chromebook. And part of my demonstration, don't know if it'll be 2 weeks because we've got the conferences coming up and all that stuff, but definitely within the next couple of podcasts, provide a very good review of the product.
Also, if you're looking for some resources on Chrome and the Google I.O. conference, you can pop on back to Saratalk 68, where we actually have it in the show notes.
As well as a link to the Chromium repository as well.
Well, how about the geeks, Matt? I mean, the geeks, aren't they going to say, oh, you know, here comes Big Brother, here comes Big Brother Google to tie us down? How do you feel like that as far as, I mean, how would you feel as a geek, you know, using this kind of thing and saying, well, I'm going to use this as my machine of choice as opposed to something like Linux?
Well, first of all, I already addressed the concern about storing your data in a central data center. As for the more geeky kinds of things that I would want to do in Linux, Chrome OS does have a terminal of sorts. So you don't have a full-blown Linux shell, but you do have a command prompt where you can run an SSH client and various networking utilities. At the moment, the terminal does not talk, but as Mike has said, the Chrome accessibility team has been quite responsive, and I have a suggestion I'm going to share with them on how to make the terminal talk.
Matt, you've worked with several different facets of Google in the past, and it seems like this particular portion of Google, the Chrome team, I guess we'll call them, has been very responsive. I mean, how would you compare this to anything else that you've done with Google in terms of being able to talk about accessibility and be understood?
I have a direct line via email to the lead developer on the Chrome accessibility team. So he and I can cut to the chase and talk tech and get problems solved. And he's very fast in responding too. I wrote him an email this morning about something to do with SAMNet. And about 2 hours later, he had responded. And I gave him a minimal test case that demonstrated the problem, and he filed an issue in their issue tracker. So he followed through on it.
Yeah, I think it's commendable. And by the way, conversely, I think it took 2 hours because we're on the East and Midwest, and this guy's like way out in the West Coast. For the most part, after that, all their communications took like less than 30 minutes to get back and forth. And I think it's just amazing to see the way that Google is really reaching out and working in the community and how smart these guys are. I mean, these guys are not, you know, accessibility idiots. They are very smart. They're very resourceful. They've reached out to us as, you know, as Chrome has developed, as the browser has developed. They've reached out to us to make sure that system access works well with Chrome. So back at CSUN, basically, they were only showing system access as working with Chrome. And until very recently, I do believe that there's an article out there, and I haven't read it. But I know that other screen readers are finally jumping on board. And I'm very excited about what's going on with all of these companies. And again, I think Google is to be commended here. Hats off, early adopters, anybody who really has the ability to get ChromeVox installed either in Google Chrome, the browser, or Chrome OS on a netbook that you've got lying around, get yourself a Chromebook, whatever. Let's help these guys out. Let's give them some serious community feedback. Let's really, really support this effort and get some more accessibility players into the marketplace. So Matt, what do you think of HTML5? How do you think it's going to affect accessibility? How do you think it's going to affect us just on SAMNet? And what benefits is it going to bring to us?
Well, it's in Windows 8 as well, HTML5 and JavaScript. So yeah, Matt, what is it going to lead to?
Well, HTML5 has become something of an umbrella catch-all term in the same vein as cloud. So HTML5 encompasses many different things, which are in various states of implementation. One of the things that I mentioned earlier was local storage and offline mode. But one other aspect of HTML5, which is very real today in the latest versions of all of the major browsers now, is HTML5 audio and video. Now, there's some divergence among the various browsers on which codecs they support and various other finer points of the implementation of this. But already this morning, I've put together a basic HTML5 audio player, which SAMNet will use if you log into it in Chrome. And if you're using Chrome on Windows, you can use this audio player right now. Just be aware that it's a work in progress and not fully implemented just yet. Although that might change by the time this podcast goes out to air.
By the way, Matt, how will that work with somebody using, say, a Mac or using an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod? Because they support HTML5, don't they?
Yes, they do. But like I just said, there's some divergence on what codecs they support and whether you give it an M3U file or a direct link to the actual audio and what have you. So
I see. Okay.
Thus far, I have only enabled it for Chrome, but I'm sure that will be changing. As for the effect of HTML5 on accessibility, which you mentioned, I think that HTML5 will only have a modest impact on accessibility because ARIA is already here. ARIA predates HTML5, and as far as I understand, HTML5 really doesn't add to or take away from that. Now, if you want to incorporate ARIA into the umbrella catch-all term that HTML5 has become, then by all means. But ARIA is not new with HTML5. So HTML5, I think, will not have an appreciable impact either way on accessibility.
But what about the fact that as Windows 8 is coming, Microsoft is encouraging developers to use that rather than something like Silverlight, which is traditionally inaccessible?
It's hard to say because that all depends on whether ARIA catches on. If ARIA does not catch on, then HTML5 will not be much of a step forward compared to Silverlight or even Flash, because what developers tend to do these days when they develop rich desktop class web apps is they tend to either develop their own UI components from scratch or they use one of the available JavaScript frameworks, which in turn has its own UI components implemented from scratch. And these various frameworks are in various stages of supporting ARIA. I don't know of any of the major JavaScript frameworks now that don't support ARIA at all. I think they're all supporting ARIA, but still, some developers just tend to roll their own UI components from scratch. And that's a concern for accessibility because what you wind up with is just the text of the UI control without the screen reader knowing what kind of control it is. And that's a well-known problem in rich web apps going back probably six or seven years now. So HTML5 is not going to be a game changer there. It all depends on whether ARIA catches on. Now, another interesting thing to discuss would be whether HTML5 will be a step forward or backward as compared to, say, native Windows applications or the various .NET toolkits. And I think the jury is still out on that. We'll have to see what developers actually do with HTML5 on Windows 8.
You know, and that's a great place for me to jump in here and say, and that's where I really think that you, the consumer, the listener, really have a voice. I mean, you know, there are obviously standards, there are consortiums, there are legal issues, but at the end of the day, consumer demand is what drives innovation. And if we, the consumer, stand up and say, we want access to this, we want access to that, and it's not accessible. I mean, I can't tell you how many applications we've seen on a number of platforms now, you know, not the least of which is iOS, where we as a community have reached out to the developers of these things, which are usually, by the way, people, very small organizations, which are, you know, one or two or three man shops that you can reach out to. You can get a real person answering you by email, and you can give them accessibility suggestions. So, you know, I encourage consumers of these products or potential blind consumers of these products to reach out. If you see your sighted friend using an application, you bring it up and you say, oh, it's not accessible. Don't just throw it away and say, oh, darn, I can't use it. I'm blind, so they're never going to want me. I think that it's important that you reach out to the developer of that software and say, hey, have you ever thought about making this work for blind people? I don't think that that developers blatantly disregard the needs of blind consumers. I honestly think that they don't believe that we're out here.
If I could go out on a limb here, I would also say that if you see a popular or cool web app that is not accessible and you want some guidance on what kind of technical advice to give to the developer, ask your AT vendor of choice, whether it be us or GW Micro or whoever. And if it's an especially popular or innovative app, we will spend some time looking at it and figuring out what needs to be done to make it accessible. So either we or you can contact the developer and give them a pointer or two in the right direction.
Yeah, I think this is a community effort. And at least from Serotech's point of view, we are all about that. We're all about partnering with consumers to make sure that accessibility is everywhere. So we ask you to continue to advocate and push for innovation and accessibility on whatever it is you're going to use.
So we'll certainly keep you updated as developments come forth. Of course, you can go get one of those Chromebooks if you desire. Where'd you get it, Mikey, at Amazon?
I got it at Amazon, and there'll be a link on the show page.
Okay, sounds good. Well, we thank you, Mike and Matt, for joining us today to share this info a lot in that space that we'll be covering in future podcasts. So by all means, folks, stay tuned for that. And you guys can hang out if you like. If not, we're going to roll into our regular news stories that our folks have come to know and love.
I'm going to roll, man. We got work to do, and I know Matt's going to get back to
mind if I get out of here and have some lunch?
Not at all, sir. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go play with my Chromebook, and as for you, sir, back in the basement.
Okay.
Do you feel like your sleep patterns are different from the rest of the world? Do you sometimes feel the unwanted urge or need to fall asleep during the day, even when you need to be awake? Do you also feel just too wide awake to fall or stay asleep during the night? If you are blind, this could be a real sleep problem related to a lack of light needed to keep your body in sync. Learn more about an ongoing clinical research study that is evaluating a new investigational treatment for this type of sleep problem. When calling, you can also complete a short sleep survey. When calling, you must be between 18 and 75 years of age and totally blind. Volunteers will be compensated for their participation in the clinical study and will receive study-related medication, medical evaluations, and transportation at no cost. If you or someone you know might be affected, call toll-free 1-888-389-7033 or email info@non24registry.com. That's info@non24registry.com.
This is the Serotalk Podcast.
All right, now we're going to look at some of the main stories that we want to talk about. Of course, this particular Serotalk Podcast is sponsored in part by Vanda Pharmaceuticals, giving you methods for improving the quality of your sleep and possibly even making money at the same time. For more information, you can give them a call toll-free at 888-389-7033 or visit them at vandapharma.com. That's VandaPharma.com or get the link at serotalk.com. Well, in this group of stories, so I call them blind accomplishments, some really cool things here going on. If you like stories about blind drivers, and there seems to be a lot of stories about that these days, you can read about Aaron Prevost, a 20-year-old blind mechanic who also got his chance to drive a Porsche.
Not just drive a Porsche.
Yes, he got to race the Porsche 205 kilometers per hour, which I think translates to about 127 miles per hour. So that's some serious stuff there. You can read about that at serotalk.com, as well as TED. That's kind of the tech European conference get together that took place a few weeks ago, where another car was shown. Some individuals got $500,000 in funding to create a car that, yeah, kind of can drive by itself, but also was designed for the blind, and not just a vehicle that will drive the blind, but where we can actually interact with it and make decisions about how we drive and exactly where we go when we get in the vehicle.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a cool story. It was Dennis Hong, who I'm sure some of you are familiar with from the press conference about the Blind Driver Challenge. He's giving the talk, and he talks about initially having designed the self-driving car and then being challenged by the NFB and having to really come back and do the whole thing from scratch, because what the NFB challenged someone to do was, as you said, Michael, create a car that didn't just drive people around as sort of passive passengers, but allowed the blind to make their own decisions about, you know, what do we do next on the road?
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting to see where the future of this, you know, Google lobbying Nevada for autonomous vehicles. There's a lot happening in this space. 2011 is definitely the year of the, what do you call it? And there's something going on in Orlando as well, I believe. Maybe Joe can get us some coverage from the NFB convention.
Yes, I believe people were able to sign up to ride in the car, I think. I don't know how many people will be able to drive the car, but you can be a passenger while it's being driven, or maybe you can test it. I think they're going to be using the parking lot of the hotel venue to allow people to drive around.
Well, I've driven in a Kmart parking lot, so hey, I'll feel right at home.
Why
That'd
not?
Be pretty cool. Why not? And other stuff, St. Louis Society for the Blind has created a DVD video highlighting accomplishments of men and women who lead productive and active lives. So those of you who kind of like those positive success stories can read about that and find out how to get a copy of that yourself. Ricky, here's something I didn't even know about. Sheila Drummond has been honored as probably the first totally blind female golfer to get a hole in one.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't know this such existed. She's a president of the U.S. Blind Golf Association, and you can learn more about them at www.blindgolf.com. She says her husband is her coach, and she could not do it without him, but the odds of hitting a hole in one are 1 in 12,000. I don't know if you've ever played putt-putt. I've done that. I know it's not real golf. It's kind of fun, though, but...
I'm horrible at that, so I definitely would not be making a hole-in-one, but the idea that this is such a rare thing to begin with, and to not only have an association dedicated to blind golfers, but to actually have someone... I was kind of amused reading this story because they were talking about when people make a hole-in-one and they tell the story later, it's almost like they're talking about their grandchildren or something because their faces light up and, you know, it was this magical moment. So it's cool to read her story as a blind golfer.
Well, I thought it was interesting when they said that, you know, it's 1 in 12,000 for a sighted. Will the odds be higher or better for someone who is blind?
Know.
Because maybe we don't have the distractions. And that's going to depend, again, on our coaching and the person laying out so we understand the golf course because they're all different. Well, blind photographer is a finalist in competition. With no vision in her right eye and very little in her left eye, Tara Miller is a photographer for the 100 Acre Woods Photography. And she lives with glaucoma and is promoting her efforts to show her support for the CNIB, which she believes in very much. Blind actress Marilee Talkington. I think I should have had that name, Talkington. She deals with something called cone rod dystrophy, and basically this means she only has peripheral vision. This is where people cannot see directly in front of them, but only off to the sides. And thanks to some videos that were posted, YouTube videos from the San Francisco Lighthouse, you can hear her story. Basically, in her last quarter at UC San Diego, she decided to take an acting class and found she liked it more than she thought. Actually moved to Los Angeles and tells her story. Does have some explicit language in it, so be mindful of that. But a very interesting story. If you ever thought about a career as an actor or actress, here's someone who's out there doing it.
This is well worth listening to because it's a very honest a very real look at somebody who's trying to have a successful acting career and the types of challenges that she faced, not only being able to take visual cues, you know, from her cast members, but things like walking in and needing to read a script. Well, you can't get the script ahead of time. That would be unfair to everybody else. So this is a very interesting look as to how she overcame some of those things and how she kind of took her art to the next level. It's really cool.
Well, I mean, it reminds me when I was young and I went into broadcasting, because like she said, I never even thought about not succeeding. That wasn't even an option. Like, huh? You know, like Scooby-Doo. Huh? Like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I just, Succession, I mean, that's the plan. That's what I never thought about. What do you mean, vending stand? What are you talking about, fool? I pity the fool telling me to do a vending stand. Anyway, in AT news, quickly moving on, so I'm worse at impersonations than anyone I know. But it looks like Hims has released version 6 of their firmware for both the BrailleSense and VoiceSense note takers. Accessible Twitter has changed its name to Easy Chirp, and you can check them out at easychirp.com. I've never used Accessible Twitter. Maybe that's something to play with and see what it's made of.
Wells Fargo is going to have to cough up a little bit of pocket change. They are going to pay up to $16 million for web TTY accessibility and violations of the ADA. Basically, what happened was that Wells Fargo representatives were not accepting TTY calls, and they wouldn't accept relay calls either. So they would require their deaf customers to leave messages, which unfortunately those calls never got returned. So these customers were just kind of hanging out in limbo without any support from Wells Fargo. They did settle out of court, though, and will be paying this money to improve their infrastructure and do some staff training, I think.
I wonder if this happened with other institutions, because a few years ago when I worked with the Better Business Bureau, there was a big scam. The scammers were using the TTY, the relay operators, to perpetrate scams.
How did they do that?
Basically, they were posing as a deaf person, but they were really in another country. I don't know. They were using it as aliases. That way the call couldn't be traced. So I don't know the specifics of it. But yeah, it was a big deal. Well, we told you earlier about people suing for access to airport kiosks. But with the article here displayed at Westlaw, which is kind of a big legal website, basically, this federal law has been preempted. This suit brought forth by the NFB and several persons was thrown out of court by a judge in California because under the Airline Deregulation Act, no state can actually make its own laws concerning airport security and kiosks and so forth. So actually, this falls under the DOT or Department of Transportation. So maybe the lawsuit will be taken in that direction. I haven't heard where it's going to go, but sorry, I thought we would have some talking kiosks soon, but not immediately anyway.
Well, speaking of traveling, it is convention season. I don't know if that's like hunting season or tourist season or whatever, but it is that time again. So for the folks in the UK, the online guide for Site Village 2011 has been posted. And of course, we've got the ACB and NFB conventions coming up. NFB is July 3rd through July 8th. In Orlando, Florida, and ACB is the 8th through the 14th, I believe.
Or 15th, something like that, yeah.
15th, yes.
So you get those links at serotalk.com, and of course, even if you're not attending the convention, I think it's interesting just to go learn what things are covered at conventions. I never gave these conventions much thought until actually hearing ACB radio coverage. I believe it was 99 when the ACB convention was in Louisville.
That was in 2000.
And you just heard the sessions. You didn't find out all the cool stuff that people do afterward and hang out and get to know each other and friends and people meet up. So, but anyway, you could go read the information about the various conventions. And of course, if you'd like to contribute, maybe you want to do some product reviews or anything, give us your feedback from the conventions. We welcome that via email if you want to create your own audio files, or call into the Blab line at toll-free 866-997-BLAB and just give us your 2 cents about something cool you've seen at either ACB, NFB, or Site Village. We certainly would like to hear from you. Do you want to know the latest way to identify money? Well, there's more than one. And of course, we've talked about many of them right here on the podcast. But Curtis Chong wrote a very informative blog post a couple weeks ago talking about the iBill money identifier, which you can get for about $99, maybe less if you look around. Of course, the LookTel money reader for iOS devices, I believe that's $1.99, and a couple other options. You can get the link to that blog post over at serotalk.com. Recent tech chats of interest. We'll do our little shameless Cero Talk plugs here. But Tech Chat 105, we talked about improving the quality of your sleep. And for those who were able to stay awake during the presentation, just kidding. Yeah, you can actually make money by taking part in a clinical sleep research study. It's being conducted by Vanda Pharmaceuticals, and you can learn more at CeroTalk.com. And by the way, for full disclosure, which you've heard, but we should point out that Vanda is currently a sponsor of the Cero Talk podcast, and we appreciate that. Another one that got a lot of publicity, we didn't mention 2 weeks ago with all our iOS coverage, but 103 covered outdoor activities and fun, including camping, biking, and hiking, and boating. I thought the interview with Lawrence, blindfishingboat.com, was very interesting. I thought Lawrence was a pretty awesome guy.
Absolutely.
People talking about, you know, riding bicycles and using audio indicators to avoid vehicles and traffic and stuff. Wow. I mean, it's a very different world than when I was younger and brave and went out and played with all that stuff. Time for some Apple news, as always. Looks like U.S. Government 2.0, I'm guessing that's a name that came out of the Obama administration, but it looks like they're switching from Blackberries to iPads.
That's right.
Don't know what else to say about it other than the folks, of course, the government employees like it, but there's already been some security issues that have cropped up their ugly heads. And of course, the U.S. Senate, not related to that specifically, but the U.S. Senate website has already been hacked not once, but twice. So, I don't know. I think people are getting brave, and with all the publicity Sony's got for the 77 million compromised credit card accounts, I think people are wanting to show now what they can do.
Well, if you absolutely must have an unlocked iPhone and you live in the U.S., good news for you. For a mere $649, you can get one of those unlocked phones now being sold in the U.S. This is taken a little while because they're generally available in other countries right off, right? And it's only just now that we're seeing them here.
Now, is that $649? Is that the 16, but the 32 is $749?
Yeah. Right.
Well, I don't know. I'm kind of asking myself why. I mean, you know, either way, you're still going, yeah, you don't have the two-year commitment, but you're still choosing one carrier unless you travel and need to switch carriers. Maybe if you want to Sprint, there would have been a time you could have made the money back by going with T-Mobile that was cheaper. But I think once AT&T gobbles that up, we can look for that discounted price to go away. There's been some rumor of them creating a Sprint-specific phone. We'll have to see if that comes to pass. But I don't know. You could send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Would you buy an unlocked phone just to have one, even if you're still going to walk in there and commit yourself to 2 years to some agreement? I'll be curious to see how many people will spend the extra money to do that. $199 versus $649. What's that, $450? No, $500.
Yeah, that's a pretty big chunk
of change. $450 extra dollars for that.
Also, you have your world travelers who would just be able to get a prepaid SIM card. So if you travel to another continent, or if you're a big time traveler and you don't want to have AT&T overages for roaming data, you know, let us know how that works. Let us know if it's accessible and if you can slide those SIM cards in pretty easily or not.
Yeah, especially the small ones now. Fred's Head blog post talks about a program we mentioned briefly, and Mike Cowell played around with it in the beta cycle, called VizWiz. And while he said it wasn't perfect, the concept is you have humans describe items that you send pictures of. Ricky, I don't know if you've ever played with it. I know a few folks that
I have, yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
I think this is excellent. Omobi is one way to do this, where you're able to take a picture of an object and then have something returned, you know, either a crowdsourced answer or using IQ engines, which is doing computer-aided image recognition. But the difference between Omobi and VizWiz is that with Omobi, you just take the picture and it attempts to identify the object. With VizWiz, you can actually ask a question. So you record a question with your iOS device, submit that, and then you have three different ways of getting information. You can either use IQ engines, you can use the VizWiz workers, which I believe they're Mechanical Turk workers, and so they're getting paid to look at the picture, listen to the question, and provide an answer, which may sometimes be move your camera closer, I can't see it, or, you know, it answers something specifically, like you can say, what temperature is my oven set to, and get a returned answer. The third way that you can do this is to actually post the question from your Twitter feed. In that case, it posts something to your Twitter feed saying, please answer this question for me. You visit the link and the picture is shown as well as the audio of the question that you've asked. So it's really a great way of doing crowdsourcing. Now, sometimes it may take a little longer to get an answer than it does with something like Omobi, but you can also be a lot more specific about what it is that you want to know.
So give it a play, folks. Put it through its paces.
It is free, by the way, so nothing to lose.
Exactly. Well, if you're one of the few holdouts that still hasn't taken the plunge into getting an iPhone, or maybe you have and there's still parts of it that you just don't get, Deborah Kendrick reviews a book that was written by Anna Dresner and Dean Martineau. It's called Getting Started with the iPhone. It's a very good book. It's well written. Of course, both are fine authors and great communicators, so you can check that out.
Well, surprise, surprise, Apple has reversed its decisions about how it's going to handle in-app subscriptions. Initially, Apple wanted to get a cut of the revenue generated from any sort of subscription services that were available through the App Store. So you weren't able to have a subscription-based service without Apple getting a cut. They've since kind of backed off on that and said, okay, you can offer your subscription outside the App Store for purchase so that we don't get a cut. And they've also made a couple of other changes to the subscription model. Now, one thing that you can't do is have a buy button from within the app that directs somebody outside the Apple ecosystem to do that subscription-based service. If you want them to be able to do the purchase in-app, you can't have it directing you elsewhere.
Well, we mentioned in the last podcast of Apple's announcement of iCloud, way to store all your data, music, and all that stuff. Looks like a company called iCloud Communications has decided they're going to sue Apple, saying that Apple has infringed on their trademark, even though Apple paid some $4.5 million for the iCloud.com domain.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it turns out that iCloud Communications had not, in fact, filed for a trademark, although they had been doing business for a number of years, 5 or 6 years, I think. And this is really nothing new for Apple. You know, they tend to be all about asking for forgiveness rather than permission. They see something they want, they take it, and then sort of deal with the consequences as they pop up.
Well, they can always buy their way out of it. I mean, they have a nice cash reserve. But yeah, if they didn't even file the trademark, I don't know how much what legs they have to stand on. But we'll report on that again if it merits it, if there's anything relevant going on there. We talked last time a lot about iOS 5, and there's not a lot to talk about until it's officially released, other than there was an article saying a complete list, which it wasn't complete, but the interesting thing were two new accessibility features. That's custom vibrations and custom LED flashes, I guess, for both calls and messages. So we will have some tools to use different vibrations to tell who our messages are coming from or for different callers. So we could be in a meeting and have vibrate mode and know who's actually contacting us. That's pretty cool. So we'll see what comes out of that. A bill has been introduced into the U.S. Senate. It seeks to enforce mobile privacy laws on both Apple and Google. If this is passed, companies must specifically receive permission from us before data can be shared. This has to do in particular with location-based info services. This covers both smartphones and tablets.
We talked a lot earlier in the show about the Chromebook, which just hit the store on Thursday, the 16th. Of June, so those are available for you to get your hot little hands on if you so desire.
Yeah, and of course we talked about it using HTML5 and JavaScript. Well, that's also going to be a big part of Microsoft Windows 8. Demos were shown, and those seem to be the two languages. So if you're out there and you're programming or trying to decide which languages you want to pick up or perfect, Looks like HTML5 and JavaScript are two things you're going to really want to spend a lot of time on. The dates look like there will be a fall release for beta of this, and maybe a 6 to 10 month development cycle, which should get it out in the hands of the OEM and the manufacturers sometime this summer. And they're a little short of committing to it, although one person has been quoted as saying fall of 2012, maybe around September, or I think it was October of 09. So they're shooting to get it out within 3 years of the release of Windows 7. So hopefully by fall of 2012, you'll be able to play around with that. And it's included Narrator screen reader. And I tell you, folks, if they do, Microsoft stepping up to the plate here and calling it a screen reader, we as users will have to kick in some advocacy like we've never done before and make sure that is a top-notch product. If they're going to label it, as they have done in the YouTube video, calling it a screen reader, which I encourage you to go see if you haven't. It was actually in the show notes of our last podcast, and we can post that again. A little slow in getting started, but well worth listening to and viewing that review of the Narrator screen reader for Windows 8. Washington, D.C. public school system has agreed to reinstate and offer back pay for 3 years for two teachers totaling $450,000. These two totally blind teachers were fired because the school did not have their certificates in hand. But that information has been provided, and they're going to be reinstated and also be compensated. Well, Ricky, you heard the old saying, what would you do for a Klondike bar?
I was going to say that myself. What would you do for an iPad 2?
Well, apparently a 17-year-old Chinese boy sold his right kidney for what equals about $3,400 US. And he said he really wanted an iPad badly. But unfortunately, things did not go so well. The facility that actually removed it in what should have been a three-hour procedure, well, they weren't qualified to do so. And he's had some complications, and understandably, he now regrets his decision. As of the writing of this article, which I think was about 2 weeks ago, his health had deteriorated or is deteriorating, so I don't know the status of this young man, but there's no product, Apple or otherwise, it's worth a kidney.
Exactly.
I swear, I've gotten this email before. Isn't it, you wake up in a hotel in ICE, and somehow someone has stolen a kidney, but they left an iPad there on the sink. Is that how that works? Or
yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
It's an urban legend. Well, you know, or at least I thought it was, but
I don't think it is. The way that email was portrayed is a bit of an urban legend, but there are rings. There are rings of people, I think, in Central South America that do that. But I think in that case, you don't wake up in a hotel room. They just basically, you're just never to be found again. So they do it with homeless people and so forth. But I think it actually does happen. It was portrayed in the TV show Nip Tuck. I don't know. Which I don't know what
which
that
is.
Means,
which is the foremost authority on things that actually happen. But anyway.
Well, that's what we base our viewpoints on. You know, is there something... I mean, we all use accessibility every day. We all use products. We all have Macs. We all have, you know, an iPhone or an iPad, you know, and multiple devices. You know, is there a device that you don't think you could live without? I mean, not that you would, you know, sell an organ per se, but is there a device that you really just, you know, value more than anything else?
That's a tough question. I'd rather keep my kidneys, but...
No ticker. No ticker. I got to leave this blind ghetto. I got to leave. Okay, I'm done. We out.
Well, next time, Ricky, you have a relative that says, you know, I'll do anything for anything, you can always go, let's put that to the test.
Sell a kidney.
It's better than working your way through college.
Well, yeah, but the problem is you're going to need that kidney if you're going to college because you might tax it a little bit with all the extracurricular activities that college kids are wont to do.
Well, folks, I don't know what else to say beyond that. Thank you for joining us. We got some great tech chats coming up. We're ablegamer.com. We're going to find out about how people with differing disabilities approach gaming, the mainstream gaming devices and programs. Software. And of course, convention coverage will be coming up, and we welcome your input. Definitely, if you don't have it, the iBlink Radio app. for both iOS and Android, because AT news and information changes at the blink of an eye, and that's where we will be posting convention coverage. So until we meet again, folks, we'll stay connected and directed and all that good stuff. This is Michael Loff.
Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
You've been listening to Seratalk. Visit us at www.seratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@seratalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.